You are Locked On Balls, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good Tuesday, everybody, and welcome into Locked On Balls. It's your team every day. I'm your host, Eric Kane, at underscore Kaner on Twitter, at Locked On Balls. Locked On Balls each and every weekday morning when you wake up, wherever you get your podcast. I love Tuesdays. You guys know this by now, Twitter Tuesday, and we had a ton of questions sent in. So guys, thank you so much. I appreciate that. That's what we're going to do here in segment one and two. And in segment three, I want to touch base on something I teased in yesterday's show. College Football Home put out a tweet over the weekend regarding the greatest rivalry in college football and the teams that they put out there I don't agree with. It's Tennessee Vanderbilt. I want to get your thoughts on that. So a lot of questions we will answer here on a Twitter Tuesday edition of Locked On Vols, plus a little football talk in segment three. But first, I do want to acknowledge that, to no surprise, Jaden Springer came out on Monday and announced he's going to declare for the NBA draft and he's going to hire an agent. So that means that he will not return to school. I know that there's some different rules. They've changed a lot over the last couple years to where if you don't hire an agent, you can come back. If you hire one of the NCAA-approved agents, you can still return to school. But Jaden Springer's gone. He's projected as a first-round pick somewhere right around kind of borderline lottery, 15 to 20-ish a little bit. So Jaden Springer, to no surprise, he has gone to the NBA, and best of luck to him. He is going to get paid and make a lot of money, and couldn't be happier for him. And I would expect Keon Johnson to do the same. I don't know when. I don't know the timeline. Of course, we're still awaiting some final words on E. Pons, who I believe is gone as well, and John Fulkerson. But nonetheless, that is the latest. Jaden Springer is off to the NBA. So let's buckle up. Twitter Tuesday, we'll get to your questions here on a Locked On Vols. We've got Kyle Hensley at KyleHensley1062, and he is asking about recruiting. There's been a lot of concern about Heupel's recruiting ability from both the fans and media members, but also hear a lot of great things that he's doing with his off-the-field staff. Can you explain how the recruiting staff and on-the-field coaches work together through the recruiting process, and how much of an impact can a stellar recruiting staff have? It's a great question, and I think a lot of people forget, like, you know, prior to the Butch Jones era here at Tennessee, to my knowledge, there wasn't really much off-the-field staff, and that's all that is college football now. Of course, you have a on-the-field staff, you have a head coach, and they're the most important things. But when Butch Jones came to Tennessee, if I remember this correctly, he kind of looked around and said, "Hey, where was your recruiting staff from, you know, the past regime?" And they said, "What are you talking about? We don't know what this is." A recruiting staff's full of, you know, I believe about 6 to 10 people, and they have a large part in recruiting. So these junior days, normally whenever it's not COVID, and prospects come up on the weekends. I remember back in early 2020, before the pandemic in February, Tennessee held 3 junior days in the month of February, and I went and covered those. And essentially, you just come on, they show you all around, they bring players in front of you, academic counselors, you talk with your position coaches, and the recruiting staff pretty much sets all that up. The recruiting staff makes all the recruiting edits you see on social media. They initially target the prospect, put the tape in front of the coaches, and kind of set that out. And also, in the early stages, a lot of times, they are the ones that reach out to the prospect. So it is vital to have a good off-the-field recruiting staff at your disposal. If you have a good one, it makes it that much easier on the head coach and the on-the-field recruiting staff. When it comes down to it, the prospects want to hear from the head coach, and they want to hear from their position coach, and often the coordinator. So the head coach and the position coaches will have the biggest selling points, don't get me wrong, but it all starts with the recruiting staff off the field. So that's a really good question, and recruiting staff, very, very important, and I think Tennessee's got a good one here with Josh Heupel. We make our way now to Andrew Florio. He is at Andrew S. Florio on Twitter. Wants to talk about some quarterbacks. With the uncertainty now with Caden Salter's future, how does that impact the importance of landing a quarterback in the 2022 recruiting class, and who are the best options remaining? Yeah, good question. Tennessee wanted Ty Simpson, and then Sam Horn was the backup. Ty Simpson committed to Alabama on a Friday. Sam Horn committed to Missouri on a Sunday. And just like that, Tennessee was down their top two quarterback targets in the class of 2022. Tennessee is now after Taven Jackson. He's a 4-star dual-threat quarterback, 6'5", 195. He's from Greenwood, Indiana. where he attends Center Grove High School. He's the 7th-rated dual-threat quarterback in the class, the 9th-rated prospect in the state. He has 30-plus offers. He's an athlete, relatively new, of course, to this new staff, but the full-court press on Ty Simpson liked Sam Horn a lot more than the previous staff did. But when those two guys left, they turned their attention to Taven Jackson, who picked up an offer about a month ago. I believe he's done some virtual visits with Tennessee. But nonetheless, Tennessee, really any college football team, in my opinion, you've got to have a quarterback every single class. So, yeah, even if Caden Salter comes back and is a part of the room, if he's not, regardless, in my opinion, you've got to bring in a quarterback each and every year. And it looks like Tennessee's now all in on Taven Jackson. We'll have to see. There's a long time between now and signing day, and a lot can happen. But that's Tennessee's target right now, the dual threat from Indianapolis. And I would also assume that maybe after spring practice, maybe a quarterback leaves the room. Brian Maurer's been active on social media. He seems really pumped up and ready to roll. So I thought he might be a candidate to leave, you know, a couple years ago, and he's still here. I think Hendon Hooker and Harrison Bailey are kind of the front runners to kind of win this job. So, you know, we'll have to see exactly what happens. But you guys know college athletics nowadays, constantly moving, constantly changing. But to answer your question, Andrew, very important regardless of the situation. But to your point, if Caden Salter's not back on the team, you need to, you know, it's even more pertinent to bring in a quarterback. But Tennessee will bring in a quarterback in this class. For sure. We head on over to our final question here in segment number one. We'll take more questions in segment two here for a hashtag Twitter Tuesday, guys. I appreciate you sending in your questions. We'll go to Brandon Head, and Brandon wants to know, he's at Brandon_Head. Do you think this year's QB room has the most talent that Heupel has coached as a head coach? I do not. So when Heupel took over the job in Orlando at UCF, he had Mackenzie Milton. Mackenzie Milton was the star-studded quarterback that led UCF to that magical season back in 2017, and he got hurt there late in that year, and then I believe it was Gabriel that came in and finished off the job, and then it was Gabriel's job from there on out. Mackenzie Milton is transferred. I think he ended up landing at Florida State, but that's beside the point. You have Mackenzie Milton and Daniel Gabriel, and those two guys were really, really, really good. What Josh Heupel's inheriting now in the quarterback room is Hendon Hooker, a guy that is a experienced quarterback at the Power 5 level. He is a guy that has played a lot of football. You got Harrison Bailey that was a 5-star coming in that's gotten his toes wet in college football. Caden Salter, a really hyped incoming freshman that may or may not be a part of the team now. And Brian Maurer, who's an athletic guy but has had opportunities. So I think there's talent in Tennessee's quarterback room right now, no doubt. There is talent. But in terms of, is this the most talent in the quarterback room that Josh Heupel's had? I would say no, because Mackenzie Milton was really, really good prior to his injury, and Gabriel took it up a step, you know, a notch back in 2018 for sure. So I would say no, but hey, it's early. We'll have to see what happens here over the next couple of years, and maybe that answer will change. What I do know is Josh Heupel has coached quarterbacks. He's coached a lot of good ones, and he's developed a lot of good ones. Drew Locke, Sam Bradford, Daniel Gabriel, all those guys. Let's say it could be Harrison Bailey here, maybe Hendon Hooker, maybe another guy. We'll have to see. Twitter Tuesday will continue on the other side. But first, remember, guys, Rock Auto. My friends at rockauto.com, a family business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. You can go to rockauto.com, shop for your auto and body parts from hundreds of different manufacturers. They have everything you need, from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpets. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog, unique and remarkably easy to navigate through, you can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, the prices at RockAuto.com, always reliably low and the same for professionals or the do-it-yourselfers. So why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? 50% as much for the same parts? Why? You can get them cheaper at a discounted rate online for people you can trust at rockauto.com. How do you do it? Well, go to rockauto.com right now. You can see all the parts available for your car or your truck right locked on in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Welcome back into segment two of a Twitter Tuesday show here on Locked On Vols. At Locked On Vols on Twitter, at _Caner. I'm Eric Kane. And after you finish with this podcast, Locked On Vols, check out Locked On Today. It's all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. You can hear host Peter Bukowski does a great job with the latest news in every major sport with the help from local experts around the network. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you podcast. Twitter Tuesday, guys. Appreciate all the questions that you guys have sent in the past couple days. Great turnout this week. I love it. I appreciate it. And we're going to get so many questions one week that we're going to make this thing the entire show. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. We move on. We'll go hole in the roof at Hitter94 on Twitter. Here's the question. Everyone talks about Lenneth Whitehead as a potential inside linebacker since he played that in high school and was rated highly there. However, he came here because he wanted to play running back. I don't recall Golith mentioning his name at running back the other day. He didn't. Question is, with spring ball starting, is he with the offense or the defense at practice? Has anyone reached out to him and asked if he'd be receptive to making the move? I feel like there's a direct line there playing at linebacker. I agree with you. So to answer your questions, we can't have contact with the players without going through Tennessee. Once they step foot on campus, I can't call that. They're no longer prospects. And so throughout the recruiting prospects, when these guys are in high school, I know it sounds weird, but I can text them, I can call them, I can DM them and all that. Once they step foot on campus and they become a Tennessee football player, I can't talk to them without going through the university. And usually it's off limits. They don't let you talk to them unless they present them in a media setting. So no one's reached out to him, to my knowledge. I can't answer this. Lenneth Whitehead is with the running backs. He's with the offense. And Golish did not mention him when breaking down the running backs. It was big. He mentioned Jabari Small a couple of times, mentioned Tyon Evans a couple of times on Friday or on Saturday when he met with us. But no Lenneth Whitehead. Lenneth Whitehead's about 6 foot two, 230, 235. That's what he stepped foot on campus. He was hurt last year. Spent the majority of the season rehabbing and then on some scout team. I don't think he fits this offense per se. That doesn't mean he couldn't fit into the scheme later on. But to be completely honest, I haven't seen him practice at all since being at Tennessee because we haven't been at practice. Hopefully later today will be the first time. We're supposed to have it on Saturday, but it washed us out. And he hasn't played in a game. So I haven't seen him really play since he's been on Tennessee's campus. But I did watch that film. I covered him when he was a prospect before he signed. He's a good football player. He's strong. He wanted to play running back, but I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. I've mentioned it a couple of times. There is a direct line of playing time at inside linebacker right now. And I don't think whether it's a 4-2-5, 4-3, or 3-4 base, I really think it's going to be one of the first two in terms of what this defense will be out of a base formation. And we're going to talk about it more and see more, and we'll talk to Tim Banks later this week about exactly what Tennessee, actually later today actually, about what exactly Tennessee's kind of figuring out in terms of a base four-man, three-man front. I think it'll be a four-man, whether a two or a five or three, if that makes sense. Sorry, I started going to football lingo there. But I think there's going to be one inside linebacker is what I'm saying. And so because there's not simply anybody there, you don't have many options. But Lenneth Whitehead, in my opinion, could certainly be a depth piece right out of the gate. Martavis French is not with the team. I think Bryson Easton's on the edge right now. I'll have to double-check on that tomorrow. You got Jeremy Banks in there. And then, of course, Aaron Beasley, Solon Page, Aaron Willis, true freshman. Of course, he's not with the team right now. He was a part, along with Martavis French, Caden Salter, and Isaac Washington, part of that incident with the dormitories. But I couldn't agree with you more, man. Hitter94 on Twitter. Lenneth Whitehead needs to play linebacker. I've been beating that drum for a while, so we'll have to see if eventually that happens. We'll move on to Lewis Chilton, at Lewis Chilton on Twitter. And Lewis wants to know, as I pull up the tweets, the NCAA's extended eligibility saved the Vols roster this year. Otherwise, we'd be incredibly thin. Does this mean with looming sanctions and the 25-man signing limit that the roster is likely to be worse in 2022 and 2023 because of the sheer numbers? It's kind of a loaded question. You could look at it a couple of different ways. The extra year of eligibility certainly helped in some areas. Aubrey Solomon, Matthew Butler on the defensive line. You've got Darrell Middleton on the defensive line. You've got Valus Jones Jr., a wide receiver, Austin Pope at tight end. You got some other guys I know I'm missing, but you got some other guys that decided to stick around. You also had some guys that decided to leave and take advantage of it elsewhere, like DeAndre Johnson, Ty Chandler, guys like that, and some others for sure. Brandon Johnson at UCF. It's funny how things work out. So I think with the sanctions part of that as well, that, you know, Tennessee's got five spots right now because they let three of their signees out of their national letter of intent. Jamarian Gooch, Cody Brown, and Dylan Brooks. And so Tennessee can either fill those vacancies, which I think that they're going to fill some of them just because you still need help, whether it be after spring practice in the summer via the transfer portal, or they can eat those five or eat two or three of those five and say, and present that to the NCAA and say, hey, we're going to not sign anybody else in this class, and that's going to be part of our punishment. And so the NCAA won't come down as hard on Tennessee. Any way you spin it, I think that Tennessee's roster is going to suffer because you're going to get hit with a loss of scholarship of some sorts. You're probably going to get hit with a postseason ban of some sorts, whether that's for a year or two, I don't know. And that's going to affect recruiting, in my opinion. You know, we'll have to see, even though I don't think it should, because this team's not close to winning an SEC championship right now. But nonetheless, you still can only bring in 25 a year, 25 a year regardless. I think that they're still trying to work to try to get some relief in that regard because so many seniors are wanting to stick around. But for Tennessee, really, it's not really affecting them right now because Tennessee is well under the scholarship limit right now. I mean, well under. Scholarship limit is 85. Tennessee, I believe, is, I want to say 70. I'll have to double check on that. But the next couple of years until we get out of this freshman class in 2020 that was the first class to come in that would get this extra year if they want it, through until we work our way through and get out of those classes, it's going to be a little weird. Some funky numbers for sure. But I think Tennessee's roster, regardless of any way you want to look at it, it's going to suffer the next couple of years because you're going to have some type of sanction coming, whether that be a loss of scholarship or whatever. So we'll have to see, but Tennessee's still going to try to work through it, and obviously there's some talent on the roster right now, and Tennessee's going to be able to win some games for sure, but going to be working at a bit of a disadvantage, in my opinion. And I hope that answers your question. I know I was a little all over the place there, but it was kind of a loaded question there, Lewis, but I appreciate you chiming in. Last one here for Twitter Tuesday before we hit on an interesting tweet from the weekend in segment number three. We've got Garrett Compliments, and Garrett chimes in frequently throughout Twitter Tuesday. I appreciate him. He's at ComplimGarrett on Twitter, and he says, a bold prediction for Tennessee football team, a positive one, and then a negative one for next year. All right, I like this. My bold prediction, I'm going to be short and sweet. And remember, bold prediction, by definition, it's out there, okay? That doesn't mean this is what I think is going to happen, but it is out there. It's why we call it a bold prediction. My bold prediction, Tennessee wins 8 games. Ask me if I think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but there's certainly a path to winning 8 games. Stay with me. Bowling Green, win. Pittsburgh, I'm going down the schedule here. Bowling Green, win. Pittsburgh will be tough, win. Tennessee Tech, win. Florida, loss. In order to get to that 8-game plateau, you've got to beat either Missouri or Ole Miss. For the sake of this, we'll say Missouri, win. South Carolina, win. Ole Miss, loss. Alabama, loss. Kentucky, win. Georgia, loss. South Alabama, win. And Vanderbilt, win. Right there, that's 8 games. So in order to win 8 games, you got to sweep your non-conference schedule of South Alabama, Tennessee Tech, Pittsburgh, and Bowling Green. You've got to win one or the other, Missouri and or Vanderbilt. And, of course, you got to take care of business against South Carolina, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Anything can happen. That's my bold prediction. Tennessee wins 8 games. We'll have to see how far off on that I'm on that one. But, again, bold prediction. Second half of that, the negative bold prediction. Well, this one's not so much fun. my negative bold prediction, Tennessee finishes in the bottom third in rush defense in 2021. And I don't think that's going to happen because Tennessee has too much returning up front on the defensive line, just too many guys that have played too much football, if that makes sense. But again, at linebacker, you're so thin. Secondary, I know we're talking rush defense, but the safeties and quarterbacks certainly help in rush defense. And you've got some playmakers back there. You've got a good starting group, but you don't have any depth right now. So because of the lack of the depth in the back end, because of absolutely no depth whatsoever, and really any starters at linebacker right now, I think Tennessee, bold prediction, Tennessee finishes in the bottom third in rush defense in 2021. Now, Rodney Gardner's a stud. I have full faith in Rodney Gardner. He's going to get this right. We'll have to see what Tim Banks and Ryan Jean-Mary and Mike Eckler and Willie Martinez can bring to the fold as well. You guys know Willie Martinez too, but those are some bold predictions, and Garrett, I appreciate it, man. That was a whole lot of fun. This whole Twitter Tuesday experiment off and running, guys. I love it. Thank you so much. Continue to send these questions in. Go ahead and do it now if you got one. I will bookmark it. I will save it, and we will run with it for next week. You can bet on that. Speaking of betting, bet online. Fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The Elite Eight is underway right now. Have some fun with it, guys. Football's not going on right now, but college basketball, the peak of its season happening right now. The NHL out there on the ice. NBA well into the second half. Baseball, opening day is later this week. Chop on. Let's go Braves, right? Let's go Braves for the A. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality television. Real-time, updated odds and props on almost anything you can possibly imagine. BetOnline's got you covered for the news, the scores, the odds. It's the best way to place your bet. It's completely free to sign up. So how do you do it? Well, head on over to the website or use your mobile device. Sign up today. And when you sign up, it's completely free. And if it's your first deposit, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus. They're going to give you money to play. How many places do that? They're going to give you 50% and a welcome bonus on your first deposit. All you have to do, use the promo code Locked On. Promo code Locked On. Promo code Locked On. Bet online, your online sports book experts. And March Madness, can't talk about March Madness without Built Bar Madness. What is that? Well, you guys know, we're trying to find out which Built Bar is best, in the words of Dwight Schrute. Built Bars, what are those? Well, you know by now, but in case you don't, it is the amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing-tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all the bars. It is the protein bar that looks and tastes like a candy bar. Trying to find out which one's best. 18 flavors, 12 OGs, 6 brand new flavors. They continue to outdo themselves over there. And today's matchup, we are in the nitty-gritty, guys. Last week of voting, today's matchup is a tough one for me because y'all know my love for cookies and cream. I also have a sweet spot for cookie dough chunk. So today, it's civil war in the Kaner household here. Cookies and cream going up against cookie dough chunk. I'm going to side with cookies and cream because it's the old reliable. But man, that cookie dough chunk is fantastic. Cookies and cream, cookie dough chunk. What say you? Cast your vote, billbar.com, or on Twitter, at bar_built. While you're there, promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15. To get 15% off your next order. All that, guys, is Built Bar Madness at BuiltBar.com. Our Locked On College Basketball experts are recapping each weekend of March Madness on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch Live on Monday nights on Locked On Live. If you missed this weekend's recap following Locked On SEC, ACC, Pac-12, Big Ten, or Big 12 today, you can check out the feed. So a lot of great stuff, guys. I did tune in the other night and had a, I was really impressed. A lot of knowledgeable people on our network here at Locked On Vols. A lot smarter than me, I'll tell you that. Everyone sitting at home in the car, in the gym, in the office, shaking their head. Yeah, we know that. But nonetheless, check it out, guys, if you want some even more in-depth basketball action after each weekend of the tournament. A final segment here on a Tuesday edition, Twitter Tuesday of Locked On Vols. Again, I appreciate all the questions. Send them on in. If you got questions, I'm going to bookmark them each and every day. A great turnout this week. And again, the goal is to do this for all three segments next Tuesday. All right, so College Football Home tweeted out something over the weekend. I bookmarked it. I checked it out. A lot of reaction on Twitter. A lot of angry Tennessee fans. But I want to get your thoughts, all right? The tweet said, this is from College Football Home at CFB Home. Who would you consider to be the most competitive rivalry in college football the past 10 years? Keep in mind, the past 10 years. Give me Vanderbilt in Tennessee. Immediately you're saying Vanderbilt, Tennessee, are you kidding me? And we know the recent success Vanderbilt had against Tennessee. Tennessee's program has been just a complete dumpster fire the last 10, 12 years. I mean, call it what it is. Outside of two seasons with Butch Jones, where Tennessee was back on the map and relevant, that ended in disappointment and underachievement, it's been a dumpster fire. It has. And in that time, Vanderbilt's taken advantage. But still, overall, still, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, you serious? Well, the past 10 years, the series is tied 5-5. The total points, 273-273. Vanderbilt has 5 bowl appearances. Tennessee has 4. So, College Football Home is saying the last 10 years, best college football rivalry. The most competitive. That's going to bring me to my next point. The most competitive rivalry in college football, it's been Tennessee-Vanderbilt. So immediately I said, well, no, but then I read it. Again, competitive rivalry. Series tied 5-5. 273-273. And the most surprising part of that nature is Tennessee has blown out Vanderbilt the past 2 years. Just blown them out. And before that, Vanderbilt had blown Tennessee out the past 2 years. So it is interesting. But most competitive rivalry in college football. Competitive is not subjective, okay? Competitive, you have stats to back it up, like the ones I just read you off there. Now, best rivalry, most fierce rivalry, that's subjective. You can still say, well, that's Tennessee-Florida, even though it's not been. You can still say, that's Ohio State-Michigan. You can still say, well, that's the end of the year, Florida-Florida State. That's Clemson against Miami, whatever. You know, that's Oklahoma and Texas. That's Texas and Texas Tech, whatever the case may be. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, whatever. When you're talking about best or most fierce college football, I thought of fierce earlier. I don't know. You guys might have a better word for that than I do. But when you say competitive rivalry, that's not subjective because there's stats to back it up. So I'm in agreement, really. Over the last 10 years, in terms of Tennessee and its rivals, Tennessee-Vanderbilt has been the most competitive rivalry. Now, overall, goodness gracious, it's not even been close. You guys know that. Overall, Tennessee still leads the all-time series 77-33-5, okay? So it's still not a matter of who owns the series because Tennessee owns it for sure. But nonetheless, it got me thinking a little bit. So is Tennessee-Vanderbilt one of the best rivalries in college football? Absolutely not. Is it the most competitive, one of the most competitive in the last 10 years? Well, considering the two teams have scored the same amount of points, I would have to say yes. But then again, there's been some blowouts along the way. So there's no wrong answer here, in my opinion, because again, I'll go back. Competitive, you've got stats to back it up. It's not subjective. But still, the way you look at those stats, if you say the last 2 years, well, no, Tennessee's blown them out. The 2 years before that, Vanderbilt drilled them. And then the years before that, it was kind of give and take. It's an interesting conversation. Some more stats that College Football Home tweeted out. And I want to kind of read these off for you just to show the disparity between Tennessee and its rivals and how bad this last little decade plus of football has been for Tennessee. I'm going to read you off 1999 and before. This is Tennessee's record against rivals. Okay, Tennessee versus their rivals, 1999 and before. Just a couple teams. This is the SEC East, or this is mostly SEC East, and Alabama's thrown in there. 1999 and before, Florida, 16-13. Now it's 20-30 advantage Florida. Georgia, 17-10-1. Now it's still pretty competitive, 25-23-2. Tennessee's always had some good success against Georgia. Now, not of late, but 2016, we had that year. But, you know, remember, even before this decade of dysfunction, if you will, Tennessee was still pretty good against Georgia. We'll go back to 1999 and before. Tennessee against Kentucky, 63-23-1. Well, it's still 81-26-9. Tennessee still owns that. Alabama, even though Kentucky drilled Tennessee at home for the first time since 1984, I believe. Alabama, 33-41-7. Now it is 38-57-7. Tennessee has only beaten Alabama five times since 1999. And it's on this massive losing streak. We know that. And against Vanderbilt, 62-27-5 in 1999. Now it's 77-33-5. So Vanderbilt's only beaten Tennessee six times in the past 22 seasons, but five of those times have come in the last 10 years. So I thought that was kind of interesting. A couple more notes here from College Football Home. If Iowa State won every game from here on out against Oklahoma, it would take the series lead in 2092. If Iowa State won every single game from here on out against Oklahoma, it would take the series lead in 2092. If Mississippi State won every game from here on out, it would take the series against Alabama in 2087. That is just incredible. So what say you? What's the most competitive rivalry in college football right now? Because in terms of stats and in terms of points, the last 10 years, even though I dismissed it at first, Tennessee-Vanderbilt, it's kind of there. Because again, competitiveness isn't subjective. There's stats to back it up. Do I think it's the best rivalry in college football? Let's be real. Absolutely not. Nobody's turning the channel to watch Tennessee-Vanderbilt right now. Are you kidding me? I'm with you. Absolutely not. But anyway, that's a fun conversation and some good notes from College Football Home that It sparks good conversation. What say you? If you have some thoughts, some comments, tweet me at _Caner, at @LockedOnVols. My email is linked in my Twitter bio, I do believe, but if it's not, emcane54@gmail.com. Holler at me. I'm thinking about maybe getting a voice line activated so you guys can call and I can run some of that audio on the shows. All that for future plans. But nonetheless, been a fun show, guys. Appreciate it. Twitter Tuesday, a success. And these little rivalry stats here in college football, fun to discuss here at the end of our show. Tomorrow, Ward Wednesday returns. We'll get Josh Ward's comments on Jaden Springer to the NBA, Tennessee football spring practice, and a whole lot more revolving Tennessee football, like Caden Salter no longer on the team for right now. So all that coming up on a Ward Wednesday as we continue on with Locked On Vols. It's a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You guys have a great Tuesday.